many ways, it's nothing particularly new, and the right wing has just made it more explicit. The center-left wants to keep it delicate enough so that you maintain that democratic image. And for Palestinian citizens of Israel, these two debates are unacceptable. We're not trying to look either for an overt system that legitimizes our inequality, and we're not looking for a delicate system either that still legitimizes and implements our inequality.
After years of debate, on July 19th, the Israeli Knesset passed the nation-state bill in a 62-55 vote. The new law has many in the Jewish community distraught over what it means about the future of Israel's Jewish and democratic character. But for many Palestinian citizens of Israel, who make up a fifth of Israel's population, the new law doesn't indicate a new reality, as much as expose what they've been experiencing for many years. I'm Alana Levinson, and you're listening to Unsettled. The nation-state law essentially names some of the facets of the state's Jewish nature. That the right to self-determination is unique to Jews, that the capital of Israel is Jerusalem, and that the language is Hebrew, downgrading Arabic from an official state language to having a, quote, special status, and that development of Jewish settlement is a national value, though not naming where that settlement should be. Something you should know about Israel is that it has no constitution. It instead has a set of basic laws that are supposedly meant to form the basis of a future constitution, and are used to guide the state's legal mechanisms. The nation-state law is now one of them. After the bill passed, I spoke with Amjad Iraqi, a Palestinian citizen of Israel who writes for 972 magazine and also works on policy and advocacy for Palestinian rights with the organizations Adela and Al Shebaka. I want to share with you that there were a few times during our conversation when it was difficult for me to find the right words. Maybe you won't notice, but I want to tell you why. I've mostly conceptualized the issues of inequality between Jewish Israelis and Palestinians living in the West Bank and Gaza as a problem of citizenship that arose from the occupation. But Israel's passing of the nation-state bill required me to think about its challenges in a different way. Because as you'll hear Amjad say, this bill legalizes discrimination against a group of people who hold Israeli citizenship. And when I think about why this conversation was challenging for me, I realize I haven't yet spent enough time thinking about these issues that arise for Palestinians inside Israel, not because they're not citizens, but because they're not Jewish. Here's my interview with Amjad. Where were you when you heard it was passed?
I had actually been in the Knesset during the day, right before it was passed later that evening. So I was watching some of the debates and kind of seeing the rather strange disconnect sometimes between those who were in support of the bill and in the way that the main Jewish parties in the opposition were kind of raising their critiques of the bill, and then also the way that the joint list, who are the main Arab political representatives in the Knesset, were critiquing the bill. So seeing that all play out during the day was kind of a very strange system, especially coming from the way that I view the bill, and then realizing, like, in kind of in the back of my head, seeing like this is very much how the last shreds of kind of democratic practice died. In a way, it is through a supposedly democratic practice that then institutes that is highly undemocratic.
So I'm wondering if you could describe that a little bit, describe what it's like to hear these kind of back and forth, the different members of Knesset, and, you know, what those arguments sound like.
In essence, the Israeli Knesset is like most other parliaments in the world. I think the main difference is that there's a lot more shouting. So you literally have, for example, an Arab Knesset member who's, you know, he's taking the podium and he has his 5 or 10 minutes to speak. And then a member of a right-wing Jewish Israeli party starts yelling at him. He's rejecting Israel as a Jewish state, that he's giving fuel for terrorists and he's a terrorist sympathizer. These sort of things. And it could also go you know, vice versa, like a right-wing MP starts saying something racist, and then suddenly someone from the opposition bench will start yelling at them that you're being racist, this is discriminatory, this is unacceptable. So it's very weird, kind of chaotic kind of practice, but that's weirdly normal in the Knesset.
What were the main points of contention?
In general, and it's and this is very much a debate that's been going around, the issue is not so much about whether the nation state law should exist or shouldn't exist. It's, for the center left, it's more about creating a more nuanced balance between the idea of a Jewish and democratic state. For the right wing, though, it's important for them to emphasize the Jewish nature of the state, even oftentimes at the cost of democracy. But these two views, you know, are very much a debate within the kind of the Jewish majority. It's very much an issue of like how democratic we need to look. And actually, a prime example is Dr. Yusuf Jabri, who's a member of the Joint List, and he was coming out and saying why the nation state law was very much an apartheid law. And he was even talking about its similarities to Jim Crow in the US and apartheid in South Africa. And he has 10 minutes to talk, and he was also being interrupted. And then he sits down, and then you have Tzipi Livni, who is a member of the opposition, and she was against the law, but she was trying to come to a more conciliatory turn. She's like, I don't see any contradiction of, to say Jewish and democratic state. And you're right, we should be doing things better for the Arab community in Israel, etc. So they were like nice words, but trying to put a more kind of polite, diplomatic face on our inequality, to still say not your version of equality, which is too extreme, is still very weird to hear. Because in the end, the nation state law is actually essentially affirming a lot of the practices that have been in place for decades. In many ways, it's nothing particularly new. It's essentially a constitutionalization of it. And the right wing has just made it more explicit. The center left wants to keep it delicate enough so that you maintain that democratic image. And for Palestinian citizens of Israel, these two debates are unacceptable. We're not trying to look either for an overt system that legitimizes our inequality, and we're not looking for a delicate system either that still legitimizes and implements our inequality.
You mentioned when you were watching these fights play out that you were thinking to yourself, these are the last shreds of a democratic nature of the state. Can you say a little more about that?
I mean, for a lot of Palestinian citizens of Israel, Israel has never been a democratic state by any means. You know, a person's right to vote, or a person's right to be elected to the parliament, or a person's right to participate in certain aspects of the state and its affairs, they are rights in themselves, but they should never be the kind of like the main signals or the main indicators of whether or not you're living in a healthy democratic society.
I want to dig a little deeper into what you were saying about a softer non-equality versus a more explicit non-equality, especially in light of this bill and what you were saying about this bill not really changing much in practice.
For the center left, it's always been very important that the image of the Jewish democraticness be maintained. So a lot of the ways that the laws and policies were framed were essentially like, well, rather than explicitly saying that, you know, we distinguish between like, you know, Jewish communities and Palestinian communities, you might have a law that essentially gives the state extensive power. And that kind of bureaucratic power that will then be used in a non-legal, ways to allow for purely Jewish communities and to allow housing segregation, for example. So when we started promoting the issue of like we want real equality, we want real democracy, among the Jewish population, this was seen as a bit of a threat, not just among the right wing, but among the center left. So when the right wing comes into power, for them it was helpful to try to bring in more security to that Jewish privilege by being more explicit through a wave of laws, for example, which it's much more explicitly enshrines the ability to discriminate against populations, which much more tries to compel or to almost force the Israeli Supreme Court to say, if you have to choose between the Jewish and democratic nature of the state, you should pick Jewish.
What I find really interesting in what you're saying is that it sort of sounds like for non-Jewish citizens of the state, for Palestinian citizens of the state and for, you know, right-wing Jewish Israeli citizens of the state, sort of seems like there's an agreement there that you kind of can't have a Jewish and democratic state, that it has to be one or the other. Is that accurate? Because it seems like you're saying, like, there's a left-wing Jewish Israeli group of people that's saying, no, we can kind of have both. We can have this state that, you know, that is Jewish in its character and Jewish in its nature, but also, you know, provides equality for all of its citizens. And it sounds like what you're saying is not really. And also what right-wing Israelis are saying is not really. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of the ironic things about it in a way, but obviously we come at it from two very different perspectives. And I can give like a personal example of this, for example, where I have a Jewish Israeli friend who believes himself to be liberal and democratic and wanting to give all sorts of rights for Palestinian citizens. But when I press him on the law on certain laws, especially one particular law which that has existed for quite a number of years, but that bans me as a Palestinian citizen of Israel from bringing in a spouse if say my wife or children were from the West Bank. So even though I have Israeli citizenship, I could not extend my citizenship to that spouse and those children. Meanwhile, a Jewish person in any part of the world can come to Israel and get automatic Israeli citizenship based on the fact that they're Jewish. And I told my friend this, what if this happened to me? What if I did want to marry someone from the West Bank or the Gaza Strip? And, she was highly educated and she got, no security problems of any kind. But this law automatically blocks her because she's inherently Palestinian. And my friend was like, you're right. It is pretty discriminatory. It is pretty racist. But we still need the law. I'm like, what do you mean we still need the law? And he says, well, we need the law for two reasons. First is security. We need to make sure that Palestinians aren't using this kind of family unification to launch attacks against Israelis. Two is that we also need the law in order to protect the demographic majority of the Jewish people inside Israel. In other words, we need to make sure Palestinians don't destabilize, quote unquote, the numbers inside the country. And this is a Jewish Israeli friend that I've known for a very long time and who, again, sees himself as liberal and democratic. But I proved that if I pushed him hard enough about what he means to the extent of democratic rights that I can receive, I get to a line where he says, you are no longer, Amjad, you are Palestinian.
Mm-hmm.
And your Palestinianness, by virtue of your blood being non-Jewish, I still need to have the ability to decide what protects me. And I expect you to accept those rules and regulations. And it's a personal example, but it's very much emblematic, again, of what is at the heart of much of the Jewish Israeli consensus in Israel, where you will have your right wing and your center left shades of how to approach it, but there's an automatic consensus there which says, nonetheless, I need to ensure the Jewish privilege, and Palestinians need to be subservient to my wishes and to my needs. So the nation state law, again, is very much... It's the right wing winning this interpretation, but it's something center left in some form or another has always accomplished since 1948.
Something that this is bringing up for me is that when I was growing up, hearing messages of, Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East, and some ways that you know that are that, there are Arab Supreme Court judges. It's striking to me that these Supreme Court judges might have to hand down rulings that are discriminatory against their own people.
Yeah, and in many ways, actually, the Supreme Court has been doing this for a very, very long time. Again, one of the myths is not just terms like that Arabs are involved in the state and in the Knesset and the courts, but that the Supreme Court also is very much a vanguard of liberal democracy in Israel, protecting the rights of minorities, protecting democratic freedoms, etc. As far as Palestinian citizens are concerned, this has never been the case. And in fact, over the past decade, many of the judges who've been on the Supreme Court have actually become much more right-wing, very conservative, very religious even. And some of them are also actually from settlements in the occupied territories. Mm. And those backgrounds, those opinions, are very much manifested in their legal decisions. For example, in the last couple of years, you know, the Supreme Court has happily condoned, you know, they shut down petitions brought by various organizations against laws that allow segregation, like the Admissions Committee's law of 2011. They shot down petitions against the family unification law, the ban on family unification that I mentioned earlier. They shot down petitions trying to defend a Bedouin village in the Negev, Bedouin citizens of Israel, whose home is going to be demolished in order to build a town exclusively for Jewish citizens. And you would think that this is, for example, is one of the prime examples of pure racism, but the Supreme Court still found a way to try to legitimize building a Jewish town over the ruins of a Palestinian Bedouin town. So the Supreme Court has been making these terrible racist decisions. But now, instead of having to, again, try to navigate through multiple legal mechanisms or excuses to justify those decisions, they can now turn to the Jewish nation state law and say, this is the basic law. We are obligated. We must obey the law that says we put Jewishness over the democratic means. So I think actually that a lot of the Supreme Court judges are quite thrilled by this, that they no longer have to be beholden to a lot of the kind of the democratic mechanisms that existed. The experience of Palestinians in the past decade, let alone all the way since 1948, has shown that the Supreme Court has never been that protector by any means, even with one Arab judge in it over the past decade, or even with Arab members in the Knesset. The power still rests with with the Jewish majority, and the Jewish majority will always decide without the need to consult Palestinian citizens.
How are you feeling about this law? What's your general reaction? Are you feeling nervous that it might affect your life as a Palestinian citizen of Israel and as a journalist?
I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. It's weird that something you've always expected to happen can still startle you quite a bit. And even now, I'm still reading up on every different opinion and take that I can. And even some of the top lawyers and thinkers in this country are still trying to understand, what does this really mean? And in the end, like many laws, in the country, the impact of the law depends on who and how that law will end up being implemented. It may be that it doesn't really do much at all, but it may also be that it ends up becoming one of the most severe things that happened in the Israeli legal system in ages. So in a way, time will tell, and it's hard for me or anyone else really to predict the trend. And I'm also kind of caught between sort of like this double-edged sword, whereby on the one hand, the nation-state law almost does a lot of activist work for them. Activists and journalists who've been trying to explain why Israel has always been racist and discriminatory against its Palestinian citizens, and the law is a prime example of this. So, rather than being confused by the nuances of a Jewish democratic state, the government has basically said, "Nope, we have chosen. We are a Jewish state." But again, on the flip side, just because you expose a discriminatory and apartheid-like system doesn't make that system any less severe.
Do you think there could be a state that is affirmatively Jewish and also inherently equal for all of its citizens?
It comes down to what one means by affirmatively Jewish and the means by which one try to fulfill that kind of vision. When it comes down to it, if you ask any Palestinian citizen of Israel, there's never an issue that Jewish society has a belonging here, that they have a history. And when we talk about equality, it's equality for both Jewish and Palestinian citizens. So in that sense, there's nothing, for most people, there's nothing ever wrong with the idea of ensuring that there is a homeland and a place for Jewish people. But it just cannot come at the expense of Palestinians who have equal right to this land, but equal belonging, and should be allowed to be equal citizens of it. And my fear is in the desire to always talk about, to create a Jewish state or a state or any kind of state in any world, in any part of the world, that wants to put a certain ethnic or religious or communal identity before anything else. I don't find that acceptable. I don't think we live in that kind of world anymore. I don't think it's a value that can be reconciled with the principle that every human being is inherently equal and should be treated as such. And this is my personal view. for any country. It's hard for me or Palestinian citizens in general to compromise our right to equality, to compromise our human dignity, to compromise our right to belong equally to the land. Like, certain things have to be black and white. I don't accept compromising my rights to make a Jewish Israeli friend feel more secure or better. Many Palestinian citizens are told this. Some of us fall for this idea that we can somehow live like this. This is not an existence we should accept. No one should ever embrace being a second-class citizen. No one should ever embrace being tolerated instead of embraced and accepted. And that's very much at the heart of the struggle for the Palestinian community in Israel. It's to say that you challenge the state in the way that it sees itself, precisely because we know what equality should be, not you. And your version of equality is unacceptable. And if, in the same way, again, that if we can accept that you should have equal rights in the United States, in South Africa, or anywhere else, you cannot create any kind of exceptions here in Israel and Palestine. It's equality and justice or nothing.
Unsettled is produced by Emily Bell, Asaf Calderon, Max Friedman, Yoshi Fields, and me. This episode was edited and produced by me. Special thanks to Asaf for the tech help. Our theme music is by Nat Rosenzweig. For more details about the components of the nation state law, go to our website, unsettledpod.com. Make sure to follow Unsettled on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to make sure you never miss an episode of Unsettled.